ESPN Radio Sports.
I'm Dave Mager. Cleveland Browns denying requests to interview offensive coordinator Freddie Kitchens. He's a candidate for the Browns' top job. The Vikings' Mike Zimmer says he has no problem coaching in the final year of his contract this fall. Houston receiver DeAndre Hopkins trying to do his part for a family facing a nightmare. Hopkins will donate his playoff check for Saturday's game to help pay for the funeral of Jasmine Barnes. She's the 7-year-old victim of a shooting her family believes might have been racially motivated.
Man, it's a tough situation for that to happen. It's tough, man. What I can do, that's nothing. That won't bring back, a person. I'm not trying to make it all about me or anything like that. But it's the least I could do.
Police are looking for the man who opened fire on a car carrying the Barnes family. NBA tonight, Kawhi Leonard of the Raptors gets booed on his return to San Antonio for the first time since the trade. Spurs all over Toronto, 47-25, second quarter. Kawhi has 6. The Celtics will be missing Kyrie Irving and Marcus Morris tomorrow against Dallas. College basketball final scores, second-ranked Michigan over Penn State, 68-55. Purdue beat Iowa, 86-70. 3:27 left. Miami trailing NC State. Wolfpack up, 81-78. And 4 minutes left. Indiana, 62. Illinois, 50. Oregon freshman Bol Bol says his college career is over with a foot injury.
Which quarterbacks in the NFL playoffs do you have the most faith in? I'll rank mine 1 to 12. That and more Friday. It's the Will Cain Show. Weekdays 3 Eastern, ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, and ESPN News.
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood.
The ball comes out, and the Bears have it. It's a fumble and a takeaway. Eddie Jackson going the other way for the Chicago touchdown.
Let me be the first to tell you, if no one else has told you, the Bears are a good football team. The record says they're a good football team.
They're down a goal. They try the same play again, and this time a touchdown to Taylor Gabriel. The 6th touchdown pass for Trubisky.
Can they maintain the first place status or the / playoff berth status? Sure they could, but will they?
Jonathan Hood.
Oh, put a body on that man, please.
Swift's gonna go. All he's gotta do is now run 5 blue shirts chasing him. 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown, Swift.
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood.
And I'm saying, woo, right here. I'm the man.
Weeknights on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Happy New Year and welcome in from our first Midwest Bank studios. For the love of money. This is Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. We'll open phone lines for you at 312-332-ESPN. 332-3776 is our phone number. Follow me on Snapchat. Snap J Hood. You follow me on Snapchat, I will follow you back guaranteed. Also on Instagram, IGJ Hood. We'll hear from Cliff Augustin from ESPN Radio, huge Eagles apologist. We'll hear from Cliff coming up from Golic and Wingo coming up in 7 minutes from now here on ESPN 1000. Also, we have Tales from the Hood, stories of sports, entertainment, everything else in between. Our special guest for Tales will be Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net. If you are a wrestling fan, tell them to get to the radio at 8:30 or their listening device. Jason Powell is going to talk about the passing of Gene Okerlund, longtime wrestling announcer, AWA, WWF, WWE, and WCW, and was terrific. A Midwestern radio guy that turns into a wrestling broadcaster and a beloved wrestling broadcaster passed away the other day. We will talk about what's going on with the life of Gene Okerlund, and we'll get to that coming up at the bottom of the hour right here on ESPN 1000, the ESPN app. Hope that you had a great holiday weekend. We are back in the chair. Good to be back with you here on the program. And we're going to talk about the Bears and Eagles coming up in a few minutes. Before we get to Cliff, give me a little time here to talk about the team on the west side that's supposed to be playing basketball, and that's the Chicago Bulls. You know, it reminds me of when I talked to four-time NBA champion Will Perdue.
Will, tell us this. What stood out most about the Bulls season for you this year?
Well,
actual reaction. Will Perdue. Didn't know what to say. That's a four-time NBA champion, NBC Sports Bulls analyst, not knowing what to say. And I can understand why he's feeling this way with the Bulls being 10-28. Can I give you something fresh on the Bulls? Because if you're just joining us, we mentioned this story moments ago. The Bulls have made a trade. Memphis is trading Marshawn Brooks and Wayne Selden and two second-round picks to the Bulls for Justin Holiday. And as Eric mentioned, there's a possibility that campaign could be waived. Fine. Put on the poll at ESPN 1000. Not even a poll. Just put it at ESPN 1000. Give us your favorite memories of the campaign era. Put it like that. Just lay it out and see how that comes back. See if I get called in the office for that. You know, the Bulls at 10-28. Do you realize why Jim Boylan is the head coach of the Bulls? Jim Boylan is the coach of the Bulls because the Bulls want to tank the season.
Season too late, right?
Let me finish. Because there's more, okay? There's more to this. The reason why that the Bulls have Jim Boylan in place is because you see how Boylan is going about his business as a head coach. He's going about his business as telling the players that they have to be able to practice after losing by 56 and that they're doing suicides and feels like they're not in shape. You know, the last time I heard something like this was when Cavaliers coach Ty Lue, when he took over the job as head coach after David Blatt was fired, told the Cavaliers, like, you guys are not in shape. That's the reason why you're underachieving. You guys got to get in better shape. And in season, Ty Lue made sure that LeBron James himself and others with the Cavs had to be in shape. And they got in much better condition around February, March into the playoffs. The difference between Ty Lue and Jim Boylan is Jim Boylan is a lifelong assistant, grunt guy, bad cop to someone's good cop for years as an assistant coach in the NBA. And now he moves one chair over after Fred Hoiberg's let go. And all of a sudden, now people are wondering, like, why are the Bulls so bad? Where's the turnaround? You realize there's no turnaround that's happening, right? You realize that Jim Boylan's in the position because even Gar Pax knows, hey, you really want this to sink to the bottom? You really want to be where the Cavs are or the Knicks are or the Suns? You want to be where those teams are? Put Jim in the chair. He'll get them going. Right. Don't you all see this? You would think that with a new coach, there'd be a better response, right? But second verse, same as the first. They know who Jim Boylan is, and they know he's a hard ass. But you know what? As my Arkansas family always says when they come up here, that dog won't hunt. When they say that dog won't hunt, that means that no matter what you do with that dog's not going to hunt. The Bulls are not in the hunt for anything. You know why? They couldn't care less about this season. And so Jim Boylan or Ty Lue or Mark Jackson or whoever's the head coach, the culture is bad, so the team's going to be bad. And that's why Jim Boylan's in the chair. Jim Boylan, the same coach, all of a sudden now, and again, I don't know why it's such a head-scratcher. You know, sometimes, you know, it ain't all that deep. You can understand why Wendell Carter is not playing a lot of minutes, right? Wendell Carter wants to win. They know what Wendell Carter can do. Wendell Carter knows what he can do. And quietly, Wendell Carter is the leader of the team with all those veterans on it. That guy says more than even the head coach does. He knows how the game is supposed to be played, and he's a rookie. He's a kid. but now they limit his minutes. Does that make any sense? Maybe not to Wendell Carter.
I just wasn't affecting the game in any way. I wasn't playing the best defense. I wasn't making any shots. I wasn't rebounding the ball well. So I feel like anybody who's a competitor was going to say, yeah, I can get through them, and I'm going to keep playing hard. But, you know, it's a very thin line. Like, it gets to a point like, okay, man, let's go. And I don't feel like I brought it tonight, and I couldn't get into a good groove. So I would have took myself out.
He's hard on himself because he's a rookie and he wants to establish himself. I totally get that. But people looked at the Orlando game last night. It's like, wait a minute. How come some of these players, where's the minutes? Jim Boylan's the head coach. He's going to sink this to the ground. It's already to the ground. It's already bad. But Jim Boylan's in place because they were afraid, you know, even all the controversy and all the consternation was going on with Fred Hoiberg, Fred could still get that team to play with little pace and space. Have you seen the Bulls? Have you seen after a miss how they walk it up the floor? I haven't seen a team that slow since Fratello coached the Cavaliers. If you're an NBA fan, you know what I'm talking about. He took the air completely out of the ball. Cavs were playing in the 60s and the 70s. I don't mean years. I'm talking about points. When Fratello, in his last time as a head coach, it's like, no, we're just going to walk it up. That's what the Bulls do. They're trying to get the ball down low to Lopez like he's Kareem. What the hell is that? They've slowed it down so much to the point where it's so high school. Gotta move the ball side to side. Of course you gotta move the ball side to side. But they're putting it down there like Olajuwon's down there in the post to Lopez. Jim Boylan.
Bell not playing the final 20.
Yeah, he just, you know, didn't need to put him back in.
What do you mean by that? Like, the counter would be it's about player development in many ways.
Well, sometimes you learn by sitting, too.
What do you think he learns by sitting?
He sees what's going on in the game. Yeah. Maybe you have some introspection. Maybe you realize I got to play my minutes better when I'm out there.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Bulls lost 112-84 last night. And Dunn and Levine both had 28 minutes. And Wendell Carter Jr. had 13 minutes and Markkanen at 28. So there's a lot more Harrison, more Hutchinson, more so more Blakeney. They had some young guys out there. But understand what's going on here. It's like Jim Boylan's in place to completely take this to the bottom. And I say, for what? Take it to the bottom for what? So you get one of the top draft picks and then you don't know what to do with them because your culture sucks. See, that's the whole thing. You can root for the draft pick, but what happens when the draft pick gets here? Okay. So you just hope to be Sacramento. Don't you see it? See what I'm saying? So they got somebody as bad as possible with a wink and a nod, like Jim will get it done. Wink. Yeah. Jim will get them straight. Because Pax is saying, I want these players to run gassers, and I want them to understand the game. Yeah, Jim will get it done. Jim will run it to the bottom. It already was bad, but now it's to the bottom. That's why Jim Boylan's in place. So nobody should be surprised when they go to their computer in the morning and say, oh, the Bulls lost 112-84. What the hell happened there? Well, what the hell happened there is that they've totally checked out the team, young players and veteran players, and I'm here to tell you that it's so dangerous. Dangerous from a basketball standpoint to have that kind of culture when you have young players and young players like next town, next game, next loss, next club, next town, next place, next loss, next town, and not care. Sixers went through that a lot. It's like, oh, next town. Oh, y'all trying to lose? I don't have to try hard.
That's why he scoffed at you draft night. And you asked the question. You have guys that want to win on this roster. You have veterans that want to win. And Pax was like, oh, no, no, no.
That's what I told him, right?
Let's slow the train down here a little bit.
Pax, it's a weak Eastern Conference. Yeah. We see the landscape before us.
It may be much weaker in a couple weeks, too.
Well, the train is getting past you. That's not what you wanted, but look at the core that you have. Don't you think that's a top eight team that you're running?
Let's see. I never wanted to anoint young players to, you know, all of a sudden they're going to be something. This league is hard.
Dunn and Levine are veterans.
Yeah, they are. They're some of our most veterans. And you know, when you draft like this, you tend to forget certain other guys. And we still have Bobby Portis, who had a terrific year for us. Denzel Valentine, who had some really good times for us. So we feel like we're kind of starting this nice nucleus, and it's young. But look,
it's moving too fast for you.
Well, we're realistic. We know this. In order to win in this league, you need some stars.
Right.
And our hope is that Lowry's going to become one. Our hope is that Zach and Chris Dunn are on that path, you know, as well. And if they are, then we've got something good brewing. But we're going to be patient. And you know, we're going to be disciplined in our approach. I think tonight, kind of, you know, when we look at what we did a year ago and got those three pieces for Jimmy and what we did tonight, I mean, in 1 year's time, we feel like we've gotten five really good young players. And that doesn't happen very often in this business through the draft and through a trade. So we feel good about it.
And that was on draft night. And now look where the Bulls are. All of a sudden, look out now. The Bulls are in a bad spot. As you're listening to ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app, Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood, it's the Eagles, it's the Bears. Fly, Eagles fly against Bear Down. Cliff Augustin, big time Eagles fan from Golic and Wingo on ESPN Radio here every morning from 5 to 9. We're ready for the game. I know Cliff is as well. He joins me here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Hello, Cliff.
Hood, what's going on, man? How you doing?
You know what's going on. I know what's
it's
going
a big
on.
Game. Big game at Soldier Field, huh?
Yes, big game.
Let also, me. The Bulls are tanking too, huh?
Never mind about the Bulls. Never mind. You as a Sixers fan, you know what that's
feeling.
Like.
Listen,
right?
I know that feeling. Yeah. I know that feeling all too well.
I remember the Sixers team just kind of just going through the motions, like you know, bouncing off the wall, not caring, just trying to get to the next night. Yeah, that's what the Bulls are going through right now.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So okay, here we go, Cliff. Sunday.
Yeah.
Big spot.
Yeah.
First of all, before we even get into it, I want you to tell me what you saw from the Eagles.
Saturday,
what,
right?
When is
Saturday,
it?
Right? Saturday.
No, it's
Saturday.
Sunday. Sunday.
Is it?
Yes.
What is wrong with me? I can't think of Saturday.
Let me host the show. It's a Sunday night. Big spot. That's what I'm talking about. Let me host the show, and you just respond. Here's how it works.
All right.
I ask the questions, and you give me the answers. Don't interrupt.
I got you.
Philly
go
guys.
Ahead,
these Philly guys. It's amazing. All right. What stood out most about the Eagles this season to you?
How much better decision making Nick Foles is than Carson Wentz. I hate to say it. I love Carson Wentz. Obviously, he's a clear cut for this team. Mm-hmm. But he must have been hurt or something throughout, you know, his time throughout the season. And I just feel like Nick Foles takes way more chances, and it's working. We won the last five out of six games. I know Carson's been a part of a couple of those, but the team just responds better with Nick Foles right now. And honestly, keep it rolling. Let's go. I'm all in, man. I think the Eagles going into Chicago, and they're going to upset a couple Bears fans out there. I'm ready.
Tell me this about Nick Foles. Okay.
Yeah.
How much of it is skill? How much of it is luck?
Ooh. You want me to put a percentage on it?
Yeah.
All right. So, Nick Foles, I'm going to give it like 65% skill, 35% luck. Just because a lot of it is 50-50 balls, and really you shouldn't be throwing up 50-50 balls all the time, especially with this Bears defense with those good corners and safeties that the Bears have. But he's taking those chances, and it's working, man. I can't explain it. I don't know what it is. He's 9-2 in his last 11 starts in Eagles uniform. Him and Doug Peterson have that rapport. Him and he plays better with Alshon Jeffrey. He doesn't just lock into Zach Ertz like another guy does. And he likes spreading the ball around. And he's a solid, cerebral, good quarterback and can throw a nice deep ball.
The reason why I ask you that question is when I see Nick Foles, there's some magic to it. I think
yeah.
that it's
yeah.
not. It's, this is not to demean him at all, Cliff. I'm just saying, like,
when
I'm watching him, I'm seeing some magic there where he's making those plays that need to be played. Man, so many teams would love to have a Nick Foles like quarterback that can force plays and make, especially down the field, and connect to his receivers.
Yes, absolutely, and luckily we got that backup guy that can do that. Come in right away and knows Doug Peterson all too well. They spent time together. I mean, even when he was on the Eagles the first time, Doug Peterson was want to say like a quarterback's coach or the OC or something like that. Mm-hmm. No, he wasn't the OC. He's definitely a quarterback's coach, assistant guy. So, I mean, they know each other all too well. They know, you know, what to run, who gets open. There's a rapport there with both of them, and it works. And it, for some reason, it's just been working better with Nick than it has been with Carson.
Cliff Augustin from Golic and Wingo Mornings here on ESPN 1000 with me, Jonathan Hood. On Under the Hood, as we talk about the Bears and the Eagles on ESPN 1000, I'm wondering about the club life in Philadelphia. You know it very well as a Temple grad.
I don't know anything about club life.
I don't. I think you know it very well, and you're going to answer the question.
All right, go ahead.
And here's why I'm asking you. Because I mentioned this earlier, because you know the press was asking Alshon Jeffrey like his memories of Chicago, and I know firsthand he hated it here, and I don't know what the issue was. I mean, this is a city where, you know, you make a few catches, you get embraced, they'll put you, you know, they'll give you a restaurant, right? So what's the club life in Philly? Because Alshon loves Philadelphia. Have you heard the soundbite?
Yeah, I did actually. He said he used to just work in Chicago. Chicago was worse, but Philadelphia's like home or something like that, right?
Yeah.
Is it verbatim something along that line?
Yes.
And those players in the city, they love going out in Philly because it's like, it's weird because it's like a big city life, but it's low key at the same time. Like, I don't know. It's kind of like weird to explain. I haven't lived in Philly in 2.5 years, but I mean, I go back pretty often just because it's like it's a quick drive. I mean, it's just fun. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun to be had. There's a lot of crazy nights that can happen out there. Everything is sort of close to each other. People are barely friendly, I guess, when you go out. Mm-hmm. And it's just a different vibe out there, man. Philly's brand new.
Yeah, clearly Alshon Jeffrey just loves the city. I know, talking to him, he did not like it here. So I wonder what the reception will be when he comes to Soldier Field after all these comments.
He's got to get booed after that. There's no way. Especially a guy who like played like half the time when he was on the Bears. You know, he was hurt pretty much all the time, right?
As many times that he was not available. Yes,
exactly. So I mean, I don't think there's going to be quite the warm reception for Alshon going out there in Soldier Field. So don't expect it. Don't wait on it.
Cliff, do you believe that Zach Ertz is the most dangerous weapon offensively for the Eagles, or would you give it to Jeffrey, another receiver?
I'd probably give it to Jeffrey just because he'd be a bigger deep ball threat, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Zach Ertz is definitely like a better route runner, catcher, but Alshon Jeffrey is definitely that. I swear to you, every time there's a deep ball that goes his way and it's like 50-50, he's coming down with it. So I think he's a bigger threat. Not only that, like, he's good doing like intermediate routes, like the slants, you know, a couple dig routes, stuff like that. But I feel like he's more dangerous than Ertz. I feel like him and Carson, for some reason, they just don't click on a certain level. Ertz and Carson, they work together all the time, you know, throughout the season. In the off season, they hang out with each other and go to church together, stuff like that. So I think there's just like a better chemistry there. Carson just loves blocking on Ertz for some reason. So it's probably due to their relationship out, you know, not just inside the facility, but outside as well.
You know, you really should be giving the Bears some love. I mean, here's the Bears.
Oh, no.
The Bears playing the starters and letting you in the playoffs, you know, opening the door for you.
Yeah, you know what's crazy? You know, thank you, Matt Nagy, for doing that for us. I mean, I was loving every second of that. Do you love the fact that they did that to the Vikings, especially you as a Chicagoan?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. The Vikings, the Packers, the Lions, anybody in the NFC North. It's been a minute, man. Do you realize in my lifetime, I've only seen the Bears in the playoffs 14 times in my lifetime?
That's crazy. First of all, that's absurd because I've seen the Eagles probably like half of that in my lifetime. I know I'm a little bit younger than you. But also the fact, if you're the Bears, right, wouldn't you rather play the Vikings again at home the next week?
No, we'll just beat your ass. We'll be fine. We'll be fine.
I was about to say, you don't care who comes through Soldier Field. No one's leaving with a W, right?
Not against that defense, pal. That's not happening.
And you know what's crazy? You know, I'm watching that game. I'm just like, the Bears defense just has way too many names to name. Like, everywhere is a playmaker there. Every single level. I don't even know what's better, the front seven or the back seven. Like, you got Khalil Mack, and then I think that's the best linebacking corps in the league with Floyd, Trevathan, Khalil Mack and Roquan Smith, and on top of that, the secondary is crazy. Right. Amos, Fuller, Amuka Mara is having quite a season. 25 interceptions, 50 fumbles. Right? Is that the first time since 2006?
I mean, it's tremendous. It's tremendous. I want you to tell me this.
Defense is scary.
Tell me this, Cliff. Fill in the blank. The Eagles will win Sunday if they
make about 5 to 10 big plays. It has to be that. I don't even think there's like, because we're not going to be able to run the ball against that defense. First of all, there's no way. Also, if they, I think this is the biggest one. If they can protect Nick Foles, obviously, just Khalil Mack is just wreaking havoc anywhere, everywhere. No matter who he lines up against, every Bears game I watch, I just watch him make like three humongous. First of all, humongous plays, but he affects every single play that he's in on, and it's crazy. I don't know how many guys I've seen defensively make an impact like he has. He's got to be top 5, top 10 defensive player I've ever seen in my lifetime.
Yeah, and I looked at the game where I think the Bears are going to win this game, but I love the Eagles and the points. I think it's 5.5. I think it's going to be a close game.
Yeah.
I think it's close.
I've seen some put it on 6 as well. So, I think the Eagles, first of all, I know the Eagles are going to go in there and win. So, so you do whatever you want with those points, the Eagles going in and winning it.
Let me see. This is from our company, per ESPN Stats and Info. You're familiar with this, right?
Yeah.
The Bears defense. The Bears defense ranked in the top 10 in these categories in 2018: total QBR, yards, yards per play, net yards, sack percentage, points per game, third down conversions, defensive points scored. Yeah, you know what? Let me tell you what's gonna happen, man.
Yeah, let me hear it.
We got you, man. We got you Sunday. I'm just telling you, man, the slipper does not fit Sunday.
Yeah.
It's all over.
Man, those are some cute stats that the ESPN, first of all, those great people at Stats and Info, they put that research packet out there. Those are some cute stats, but you guys haven't faced Nick Foles yet, have you? You haven't faced the Super Bowl MVP, have you? Actually, no. Aaron Rodgers.
Wait a minute.
You haven't faced last year's Super Bowl MVP.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a criteria. You ready?
Yeah, I'm ready. Yeah, I'm ready. Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
We already have the soundbite for the game, courtesy of the Eagles Radio Network. We have it here. Let's play this for you. And the Eagles fall short here at Soldier Field, 19-16. Oh, fly, Eagles, fly. Oh.
From your hood to J-hood.
I excel, then prevail. The mic is contacted, I attract clientele.
On ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
What do you got there?
This is your car.
My car? I said a 10-second car, not a 10-minute car.
Pop the hood.
Tales from the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Here we go.
Tales from the Hood is brought to you by Northwestern Basketball at the new Welsh Ryan Arena this Sunday when they host Illinois. Buy tickets now at usports.com, usports.com. Buy tickets now. That might be a guaranteed victory if you go and check out Northwestern taking on Illinois. All right, Tales from the Hood, stories of sports, entertainment, everything else in between. This particular version, our first one for 2019, is a conversation with Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net as we have our conversation about the passing of Mean Gene Okerlund. Gene Okerlund was a terrific professional wrestling announcer. You known him as the bald guy with the little mustache that was there interviewing the likes of Hulk Hogan and Big John Studd and Bobby the Brain Heenan. I saw him first living in Chicago at the AWA. That was Vern Gagne's TV. Of course, that was based out of Minneapolis, but we saw it on Channel 26 every Sunday. And Gene Okerlund was there doing all the interviews. He was terrific. He went from the AWA to the WWF, and that really was the big time, going from Minneapolis to going to the New York office and working for Vince McMahon.
And, of course, probably more people saw him across the globe and knew who Mean Gene Okerlund was. Mean Gene's name came from Jesse the Body Ventura, who said, hey, Mean Gene, and called him Mean Gene. Of course, Hulk Hogan picked up on that as well. And so he went from the WWF and, of course, some many great moments with Bobby the Brain Heenan on syndicated shows that they would do, and, of course, a classic backstage interviewer. And from there, WCW, World Championship Wrestling, working there and kind of winding down his career as a broadcaster in that time. So let's go back and hear some of the great memories of Mean Gene Okerlund as a longtime wrestling announcer.
Mean! Woo! My God! Gene! We're in the big D tonight, baby! And we are live! Woo!
Rick was a student of Vern Gagne's. He went to the camp. He did very well. Vern Gagne's normal arrangement is he takes 10% of their income for the rest of their lives. I'm sure there's a cutoff somewhere you can can make look.
All right.
But Rick Flair gave him the Italian salute and went down and started after a couple of matches. I covered his very first match in the AWA. But he went down to Carolina, kind of moved around a little bit, and got his own niche, and wow. I don't think he could have developed that persona if he would have been working for Vern Gagne. Because Gagne would put a lid on him, and Flair is a wild man. As a matter of fact, he still is a wild man.
All right.
And a good friend, by the way.
Hello again, everybody. Gene Okerlund here, TV20's All-Star Wrestling on the air. You have just seen 6'9" tall, Big John Studd, a man that goes 345 pounds. Big man indeed. But, come on in if you would, please. I've got one better for you. Listen to this, ladies and gentlemen. The biggest professional athlete in the entire world, my guest at this time. His name, Andre the Giant from Grenoble, France. Just exactly how tall are you, Andre? How much do you weigh?
7 feet four and a half, and I weigh 497 pounds.
Andre was not only a piece of talent that I worked with, but I also got to know him well. We have a couple of things in common. We like good food. We like good wine. We like to play cribbage. And we like to play gin rummy. And you're spending a week or 10 days at a crack on the road with these guys. You're off time. What are you doing? You're drinking. You're eating. You're playing gin rummy and a little cribbage. Andre was a delight.
All right, it's absolute bedlam and pandemonium here back in the locker rooms at Madison Square Garden. Gene Okerlund here with the brand new World Wrestling Federation champion, Hulk Hogan. You proved it to thousands and thousands of fans, not only here tonight in Madison Square Garden, but throughout the wrestling world.
You know something, Gene? They proved it to themselves. All I asked was for the Hulk to stand behind the holster, and I told him I'd bring it home for the USA. You know something, Mean Gene? It is the dream of a lifetime, Daddy.
Oh.
And you know something? I can't imagine. This is like going to the mountaintop 1,000 times over. I feel the energy. Hulkamania's running worldwide, and it just turns me on, Mean Gene. And I felt every one of those 25,000+ people with me standing behind me all the way, and it felt great.
Well, you have arrived, Hulk Hogan.
Have you never seen anything as beautiful as this, Mean Gene? This belt is part yours, too. It's everybody out there, man.
Andre the Giant congratulating the new heavyweight champion of the world.
Well, fans, just to bring you up to date here in the AWA, the current heavyweight champion of the world, Vern Gagne. He happened to get that title back in Chicago, Illinois, on July the 18th from none other than Nick Bockwinkel, the man who we talked to earlier, the current tag team champions of the world, one of whom hails from down at San Diego, Jesse the Body Ventura, and his partner out of the Big Apple of New York City, the Golden Boy Adrian Adonis. Gentlemen, welcome to the Bay Area.
Folks, there is a new WCW champion, that belt having changed hands overseas. Attention hotline fans, I'll have the report on this new belt holder in World Championship Wrestling all night long during my exclusive hotline report right on up until midnight tonight. Hey, attention hotline fans, tonight, yes, tonight in Los Angeles, World Championship Wrestling unveils a secret weapon that may finally cause a rival wrestling organization to crumble. You will not see any of this unfold on television, but fans, this surprise will be available to you on the WCW hotline, and I have all the details.
Here on All-Star Wrestling, let's go to ringside. There is action in progress in the ring, and let's join that match at this time.
We're joined by Jason Powell, my AWA brother from ProWrestling.net. He joins us here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Jason, Jonathan Hood, thanks so much for your time.
It's great to be back, but we have to quit meeting like this, Jonathan.
Yeah, I know. I know. You know, as soon as I heard about the passing of Gene Okerlund, I thought of you because I thought, well, I need to talk to someone that grew up watching Gene. And I remember... for those that don't know, I grew up watching Vern's AWA wrestling because Chicago was a stronghold for the AWA during that time. So I saw Gene as a kid in the mid to late 70s. When did you first see Gene Okerlund on your television?
Would have been roughly 1980 is when I started watching.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, just it's crazy to think. You don't think about it at the time when you're watching what a big part of it he is. And then he leaves to go to the WWF at the time, and then it was obvious. You know, they lost Hogan and eventually Bockwinkel, but certainly Heenan. Those were big losses, but there was just something about the identity and the fabric of the AWA that changed when Gene Okerlund left.
It was different, and that's not necessarily a shot at Larry Nelson or Ralph Strangis, Eric Bischoff, who came in after him. Ken Resnick, too, who is very solid. I just thought, Jason, that he was the glue to everything for Gene, because Gene's there, and similar to Lance Russell in Memphis, you could just see how Gene could be able to just help the wrestler out with the interview. It's one thing to have a good promo, but it's also good to have someone on the mic that can kind of steer the interview. I think that Gene was very good at that.
Without question, yeah, that was one of his many strengths. And I would say another was the credibility. You know, anyone can hype a wrestling show. Yeah, everyone's, you know, done a mock impersonation of the promo for that, or like a big monster truck event or something. But he had credibility with the viewers. And so when he spoke about this looks like a big event that's coming up, you believed him.
And by the way, I know that... You know, as an AWA fan growing up, it did hurt me to see Gene go over to WWF, because I'm thinking at the time, why? Why is he doing this? But at the same time, Roger Kent worked for Vince. Rod Trongard worked for Vince. So Al DeRusha, one of the producers, worked for Vince. It was not surprising at the time. But I think that when I saw him come over, the one thing I noticed about Gene's career in the WWF, more so in the AWA, is that he did a lot more play-by-play slash color with Gorilla Monsoon. If you don't know if you remember that, with Madison Square Garden, some of the Toronto shows as well, and Maple Leaf Gardens, he did a lot of that. I'm wondering your thoughts on him as a play-by-play guy. Knew he was a great guy on the mic as an interviewer, but do you remember him doing play-by-play?
You know, I honestly don't have much memory of that. I just didn't get to see many of those shows. For me, he was always, you know, when he went to the WWF, it was cool to see him reunited with Bobby Heenan and Hulk Hogan again. But I also just remember him just being a ham bone, getting to take part in some skits with Heenan and different things like that that you didn't see in the AWA. It was just more WWF flavor. But I mean, so you're saying was he actually good on play by play?
Yeah, I think so. I think that, as you remember, in the 80s and somewhat of the 90s, you know, every move was a walk off home run. You know, and so and for Gene, I think a lot of that, you know, arm drag, tick down, and the other thing that resonated with me so much is that he came from a radio background. That rich voice that Gene had, you'll always remember, because that's a radio voice that's on television. And so I thought his play by play was pretty solid. Always hyped. I know a lot of stuff at the Spectrum, some stuff with Gorilla at Madison Square Garden, but just all around terrific announcer, I thought.
Yeah, you know, and it's funny, the AWA, that must have been their thing, because Larry Nelson was certainly a radio and voiceover guy. Mm-hmm. I believe Ralph Strangis was as well. So that must have been a formula they had when it came to kind of picking that I don't remember what Ken Resnick's background was. And it's funny when you're running through the list of people who moved to the WWF from the AWA. Even Gene's replacement, Resnick, eventually did. It's just everyone that they had that was worth something, and it, you know, for the most part, ended up going to work there.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Jason, about Gene, had you ever get a chance to interview Gene or meet Gene?
I met Gene briefly. You know, it was just very accommodating, very friendly, but unfortunately never had an opportunity to interview him.
I talked to him when Nitro was in town at the United Center in 1998-99.
And oh, by the way, it was around the same time.
Yeah, so as a side business, by the way, I'm going to send you my cassette tape so you could find an interview for me so I could play it. I mean, I'll give you a nickel a cassette if you want to transfer to DVD for me or to CD for me.
I don't even know if I have the equipment, but I may know someone who does, believe it or not.
I talked to him, and he was more interested in the radio side of things. I talked to him about 15 minutes. What he said to me, Jason, is just like, well, I talked to – he didn't call Eric Bischoff Eric. He called him Eric. He said, you know, I talked to Eric about doing more radio because radio still matters. And he was still talking to me about that in 98, saying that he wanted – WCW to have more radio awareness or more spots on the radio. So I thought that conversation was interesting. He talked about his career in radio with me. Not a lot about wrestling, more along the lines of what I was doing, which it just comes across as a really nice guy, Gene.
That's the thing. He's one of those guys. You know, you don't hear it often in the wrestling industry, but he's one of those guys people don't have bad things to say about. You know, and he had, you know, a fun-loving, wild side to him. He was certainly not afraid to go out and let loose with Ric Flair, but you just don't hear those bad Gene Okerlund stories. He was everybody's buddy.
Yeah, I don't remember anyone saying a bad word. That's a good trait, by the way, to not find anything wrong or anyone saying anything bad about Gene Okerlund, which is great. Do you what do you recall?
These things out with Dynamite Kid.
Right. What do you remember about his run with WCW? Because as a longtime guy with Vince, he goes over to WCW, as you mentioned, with Hulk, with Bobby Heenan, which seems to be a trend, right? They all come out in the same company. So what do you remember about him in WCW?
You know, honestly, the hotline, more than anything. And it's sad, you know, because he kind of lived up to the whole Scheme Gene moniker, because they always had him go out there and delivered, you know, deceptive headline plugs and all this different stuff. But I remember, it's not that like it was all bad in WCW, but I certainly have fonder memories of him in the AWA and the WWF than I do what they did with him in Nitro.
I think that Heenan and Okerlund always had chemistry. We saw that at times in the AWA, even though, you know, Nick Bockwinkel didn't necessarily need a mouthpiece, but I just think that Heenan, when he talked to Okerlund, was great. But I think it just went to a whole different level in the WWF. The skits that they did, doing shows together, the syndicated television shows they did, Jason, that stuff was gold.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, just imagine the things those two are doing here as they catch up, hopefully, you know, in the great beyond. If you're a longtime, old enough AWA fan, I'm sure some of it bothered some people, because anything that was like, you know, sports entertainment flavor for an older generation was just a huge turnoff. But they were so good at it that I even know some like curmudgeon types that still got a kick out of seeing Bobby and Gene do their thing together. Just remarkable chemistry between them.
And Jason, it had to be, man, it had to be tough for Gene to wear that tuxedo 24/7 in Vince's era. I mean, every time you looked around, he had a tuxedo on. There was a time in the early 80s, mid 80s, I think that's all he wore. I don't remember a long tie from him very often.
I just assumed he slept in it.
Right. I mean, everything was in a tuxedo. All those promos he did in all those cities across the country, there was him in the bow tie and the whole tuxedo. Man, what a time to be alive as a wrestling fan during that time.
Oh, it was, yeah. I mean, those were some the AWA was a blast, but just those early years of the WWF, that even though there were so many people grumbling about cartoon wrestling and all that, mm-hmm. and, you know, I certainly understand some of that. But, man, there were some really good times in there, too. And those two, Heenan and Okerlund, were just such a huge part of it.
Last thing on Gene, I just want to find out what you think his legacy is in the business. As far as all the broadcasters that you've seen over the years, where do you place him, and what is his legacy in the business?
You know, I think he's the gold standard for what he did, being the interviewer. I always want to say backstage interviewer, but in the AWA days, it was more studio type of thing. And even the WWF, when he was kind of manning the ship for those spot show promos or house show promos and things like that, just anything, you know, as an interviewer, I struggled to think of anyone that really had the charm, the wit, just everything that he brought to the table. Am I forgetting anyone, Jonathan, that even comes close?
No, I think that there is a different gravitas between him and, say, Gordon Solie. And again, we're talking about two different things here, because when we're talking about a backstage interviewer, that was Gene's niche more so than anything else. I mean, again, decent play-by-play guy, but I think that no one else did what he did. Think about all of the announcers over the years, Jason. More times than not, the play-by-play guy had to have the Gene role also, had to do the interview, whether it's Georgia, World Class, whatever. So that's
Memphis.
Yeah, that's different. It's different. And when you say the gold standard, it's different because other companies did not have a Gene Okerlund that could be able to push the cards that made you, and actually more so than the wrestlers, he sold you on wanting to go to an event, you know, whether it's at the Met or at Rosemont Horizon. He was always there within the event center with those things. So I think that's what makes him so unique.
Oh, the Met. He just brought back some good memories there. I love the Met Center. But, yeah, he really did. I mean, the St. Paul Civic Center, all of that. He just, again, he had that credibility that when he started, and some of it, too, he was gone for the dying days of the AWA. It would have been interesting how much credibility he would have lost had he stuck around for those, and he's, you know, hyping a lousy card or something special, but we didn't have to live through that. He pretty much always was with a good, stable company, you know, but he left at the right time, and sure, Nitro by the end wasn't the same, but neither was his role.
You're listening to Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.